It's 4:36 on Downtown Wednesday afternoon. Rich Kimble here with you on the Pulse, WZON. And joined on the telephone by Bob Ryan, sports writer emeritus of the Boston Globe. Bob, good afternoon.
Hello, Rich. What's new?
Well, you know what? Everybody, I'm sure, is asking you about the same thing, and I'm going to get there, but I'm not going to start there.
Good.
I want to talk about the positives. And last night, a wonderful ceremony honoring Pedro Martinez, and I thought a really great Hall of Fame weekend as well. What were your perceptions of all of that?
Yeah, and what interesting for me is that I was reading Pedro's book, Michael Silverman's co-authorship of Pedro, the biography, autobiography, and so that I was kind of prepared for the way he was going to approach the speech and his weekend, that he would make this into a celebration of the Dominican and of people of all stripes who come from a lesser background and a tougher background, and so I wasn't surprised at all that he was so emphatic about making this a dual thing. And I thought he handled it well. And I think it was very sincere. I think the one thing we can say about Pedro, like all of us, all the 7 billion people on the planet, he's flawed. He's made some mistakes in his career, but I think he is 100% sincere. I don't think there was ever a phony move in his repertoire. And I think that is something people should understand, that there was no showmanship involved in invoking the Dominican or in bringing in Juan Marichal. I think it's totally sincere, and I think people have to understand that about him. This is part of the package. He's a naturalized U.S. citizen who will never forget where he came from, that famous phrase, and I think he did himself very proud the way he handled the whole thing.
Not in terms of ability, but in terms of the excitement that he generated every time he pitched, where does he rate in your history of covering Boston athletes?
Among the two most exciting pitchers, the other, of course, being Louis Tion. I don't want people to forget Louis, who I believe belongs in the Hall of Fame, or the contribution that Louis made, or the way that Louis connected with the fans, and still does. Pedro is the best pitcher. But Louis had a very profound impact too in Boston. But anyway, one of the two best showmen, yes. Of course, Roger was a great pitcher, but he didn't have that element of showmanship that Pedro had. Pedro's the best pitcher I've ever seen in a Boston uniform, and along with Randy. And if you want to throw in Greg Maddux, I'm not going to get involved in a long drawn-out argument there. I respect what Greg Maddux achieved and how he did it. So if you want to say those are the three best pitchers post-Koufax, I won't argue with that. But I do think that Pedro and Randy were the two best. And what a contrast, 6 feet 10, 5 feet 11. the whole idea of how they did what they did, but how it all came out so amazingly insane.
Speaking of the Hall of Fame, a story that got buried a bit by the events of yesterday is a change in the Hall of Fame voting criteria for those who have been a little bit out of the game for a while. What do you think? Is that good for the Hall of Fame and good for baseball?
I don't think it's that important. I'm one of them that will be involved. And, I'm retired as of 2012. Therefore, I'm in year three, 3 years removed as an active writer, but I am allowed to vote as a that's just the way it's always been. If you're a member, if you're voting that body, just retiring from active duty has not prevented you from voting. I don't think that the older voters have stained the hall at all. I don't think it's have anything to do with anything. I don't know what's prompting it, but I don't object to it. I think that in theory, allowing us to vote for 10 years after we're retired from active duty is reasonable. And by that point, I think there probably are some people who shouldn't be voting any longer for whatever reason, whether they're not keeping up or whether they're losing it. And what they're going to require us who are in that category to do is to reapply, like we're reapplying for a driver's license in August online. I don't care. I don't take this as an affront. I think it's a reasonable approach, although I'm curious. I haven't spoken with anyone. What is the precipitating thing? Because something has happened to make people want to do this.
We're talking with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Not a fan, I know, of some of the more advanced metrics out there in baseball, particularly WAR, which you refer to as a theory. And I think you're on to something which may be the biggest issue in all of this, the fact that it takes away, I think, a lot of the enjoyment of the game, that people can't just sit back and watch the game anymore.
Well, it creates a possibility of people following the game by remote control and not watching the game with their eyes. I think the best thing is to combine both. I do not object to the theory of sabermetrics. I think sabermetrics are good, and it have helped us appreciate, a lot of us appreciate the game even more. I just think that a stat should to be based on something more than conjecture. And I object to war. I think wins above replacement is a specious, phony bunch of BS, because they tell me it's about a baseline. Well, that's very nice, but the fact is that you're measuring the player against a mythical product, this mythical replacement player, and putting a number on it. I think that's preposterous. So I object to war. I don't object to whip. I don't object to the whip. Is very nice. It's a number. It's an easily found out number. And there are other things that if not taken too far, enhance your appreciation of the game. But factoring in ballpark effect and all this, in the end, it's a judgment. It's not a stat, and people should just be careful how far they take it.
Bob, Boston's Olympic bid was finally laid to rest this week. You've told us all along it's a wonderful concept, but not great in practice. Was there a way this could have worked for Boston?
It looks in retrospect, Rich, probably not. People were dug in, convinced that it would not work, and didn't want it. The public support was appallingly low, and it's really damning that the USOC even gave it to Boston at all, based on the low level of public support that existed at the time. They said Boston's our choice. It was probably doomed from the start, and then it was further buried by the ineptitude of the people in 2024, Boston 2024. Somewhere out there, it could have been handled better by these people, but I'm not sure they would have moved the needle at all with the intransigence of the voters here, who I think some of them objecting to it for the wrong reasons, and people that clearly never saw an Olympics up front and personal and have no idea what they mean to a city or how they work. I think that too many people objected without for the wrong reason, but there were too many things going against this one.
All right, let's get to it. And very briefly here, what's your level of Deflategate fatigue?
It is 12 on a scale of 10, because it's so frustrating. Start with the idea that the footballers always should have been in control of the league in the first place, and we wouldn't be having this discussion at all. But they weren't. They were given to the players, to the teams, and all this chicanery, whatever happened. What do we know? I mean, no. Not guess. No. Very little. We don't even know what happened yet. We truly don't yet. After all this and 6 months and all this and the Wells report, we don't know. There's conflicting reports about how many footballs and what was done and what was the truth. We still don't know. And that's number one. Number two, whatever was done, if anything was done, did not affect the outcome of the game, period. He threw the properly inflated football better in the second half than the allegedly underinflated football in the first half, period. It didn't affect the game. 45-7 speaks for itself. So that's about the only thing we know. It didn't affect the game. But if there was intent to circumvent the rules, there should be censure, fine, and there's a provision, $25,000, that's what he should have been fined, and we would have moved on. And, you know, I've said this to you before, and I've said it to everybody, and nothing has happened in the last 6 months to change my mind. If this had been any other team, it would have been adjudicated by the day after, and they would have been slapped with the $25,000, we would have moved on. But the Patriots raise a red flag with everything they do. They are the pariah of the league, properly chastised and properly scrutinized, but this punishment was way over the top, would not have been given to anybody other than the Patriots. If this is the price they pay for being the Patriots, for all the stuff that happened, real or imagined, the last 15 years, and basically it all comes down to the feet of the coach, who, by the way, had nothing to do with this, but is the reason Brady is guilty, guilt by association with Belichick and Belichick's chicanery. No other team would have been subject to scrutiny, and no other team would have been so punished. That's what I believe.
Bob, before we let you go, a few minutes from now, we're going to be talking about a new book, a collection of the works of W.C. Hinds. Did you have occasion to run into him during your career?
I wish I had. I had not. I've read every comma of the book. It is a spectacular work. Bill Littlefield has brought a wonderful figure back to life. I heartily recommend this book. And I'm sorry that I didn't have to make his acquaintance. I know people who did, and their lives were better for it.
Bob, it's always a treat for us to talk with you. Thanks for making time on what I know is a busy day for you, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, look, let's hope the next time we talk, the discussion will not involve football inflation.
We'll make that happen. Thank you, Bob.
Very good. Okay, bye-bye.
13 minutes before the top of the hour here.